And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase. And yes, roll call. We're all here.
Hello.
Darren McFarland, that's me. Please wait for your name. Willie Donick.
Hello.
That's him. Elijah Campbell behind the glass.
Present.
I'm just going to make you wait longer because you jumped in there.
I don't have to wait.
Chase.
My name's on the show.
He's very excited about this Friday.
I am excited. Look, I'm excited to talk to who's on the line. He had a big night last night.
Who?
Craig Smith.
Let's see. Is that who's on the line?
Yes.
The man who netted his first career hat trick is indeed on the line. It's a good way to start off Friday's show. Crazy Legs, how you doing? Good morning.
I love it. Morning, guys. How you doing?
I hope you didn't sleep well because you were just up, just reliving the hat trick in the game last night.
No, that was great. That was a lot of fun. It's, not every time you get, and it's not every night you get a chance to pop three in. So that was great.
I always wonder, could you feel it, bro? I mean, I know you scored right out of the gate. So you had a goal 35 seconds in, and you had two not even halfway through the first period. But at any point did you, like, say, you know what, you know, we always talk about basketball references where the hoop, you know, feels 10 feet wide, you know, when guys can't miss. So when you're in that zone, could you feel it as a player? Could you feel it last night?
Yeah, I mean, at times, especially with our line, we've noticed when we've gotten buzzing in the zone quite a bit, that just feels like there's a little bit more room out there. I mean, that's kind of the best way I can describe it, but, we're just getting some really good looks. You guys have some really nice plays. Rocco made a hell of a play right behind the net to kind of open me up there. And, if he doesn't make that look, it never happens. So,
yeah.
It just feels like there's a little bit more room. You have a little bit, definitely your legs feel great, too, after you get one 35 seconds in the game.
No doubt about it.
That's always a good way to start.
Yeah, no doubt. Here was the theme I sensed from your teammates about your performance last night. Are you ready? So I talked to Ekholm during second period intermission. Hal and I spoke with Bonino in Barrel House for postgame. And I know, Chase, I think you said a couple guys even in the room. The theme is nobody could believe that it was your first. Everybody thought you already had a hat trick to this point, which is a real credit to you that everybody thought, nobody could believe, like, really? That's Craig's first career hat trick, so, you know, I was going to say hats off, but pardon the pun. But, that was the theme going around last night.
I appreciate that. Yeah. It's been a long time. I've had a lot of chances to do it. I guess situational things towards the end of the game, it can kind of change the circumstances. But, yeah, it was nice to finally get it. I know it was definitely on my checklist of things to do.
I'll ask you the same thing I asked one of your line mates last night in Bonino and Barrel House. You guys were all plus four last night. You guys have been the most consistent line all year. I don't think there's any way around that. You've played really well together. You look like you've been playing for years together. So why has it looked so natural this entire season, Craig?
Oh, man. I wish I could tell you something cool, but I really don't. I think that we've just kind of found ourselves with each other quite a bit this year, and for some reason it's been working. I think that, I think that there is a dynamic because all three of us kind of play a little bit different, which you tend to see in pretty good lines. But I think that we just want to be opportunistic. I think with what we're given and with our circumstance and our role within the team, I think that we're just trying to have fun and create some momentum and buzz around a little bit. And we've been, for the most part, we've been creating some great momentum.
To steal a line from you, Craig, what I liked about last night, besides a shutout win at home, which was cool and everybody was into it, was you guys pedaled down. You had the lead, and you stayed on it. How big was that, and how much have you guys talked about not letting off, not backing off, and just keep green light go?
Yeah, Yeah, Pedal Down was right. That was good for our club, you know, definitely to just keep playing the game. And we always talk about, you know, Heinze is big on just playing the game and not playing the score. So to keep playing the right way and do the right things, you know, creates a definitely a more consistent effort in certain areas. And it can, you know, it can create a little bit of a culture too. So it was good for us to keep to keep playing well. I think everybody was playing like their hair was on fire all over the ice. So it was great to see, and it was a lot of fun, especially on the bench.
We're talking to Craig Smith. He had the big night last night. The Predators knock off the Islanders 5-0. They'll head for St. Louis, a big back-to-back, home and home, against the Blues Saturday and Sunday. And Craig, I know the word consistency gets thrown out there all the time, and I know that's what you guys are fighting for here. But as you wind it back to the start of the road trip, other than maybe the first period in Vancouver, you guys look more and more like you know what you're getting. You look more and more comfortable with the defensive series or structure you're trying to play with, what you're trying to do offensively. Is that fair to say? I mean, I know you guys are working on having that formula that you had last night every night. You're not going to beat everybody 5-0, but it looks like you're putting something out there more consistently than before.
Yeah, I think structurally is you know, I think we've gotten everything down. I think you can X's and O's all you want, but you know, at this point, it's just about going out and executing and doing it with urgency. I think that's what, you know, we got an older group, so we're able to, I guess, kind of turn the page and execute that. So, but I think it's been good for our club. I think, like I said, we've been really focusing on the mental part of the game, and staying with games. We got a talented group here. We're I don't think that we're really out of any game that we play, no matter what happens. So, you know, that can create a little bit of a culture and create consistency and doing the right things all the time. And I think that's, you know, only good things can come from that.
Roman Josi made a great pass to you for that third one. And it just seems like he is making plays like that every night. You've played with him for a long time. We always try to do our best just to try to point out to people who may not watch the Predators every night just how unique he is as a defenseman. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
I mean, he's awesome. He's an excellent skater. I think that's first and foremost. I think that's what we see. But his moves and ability to kind of waggle around the ice and find space and create space for other guys too, which is it's tough to do this week. There's not a lot of room out there. But one of the biggest things I know about Roman when I'm out there with him, I mean, it happened last night. I mean, he jumped down and kept that puck in. I mean, he's got an instinct around the blue line to not go all in or be dangerous. But, you know, when you got a guy that's keeping pucks in like that, I mean, it's only going to create offense for you. So it was a great play by him. Obviously the pass, but that started with him jumping down and keeping that in.
You gave us a little tidbit there on John Hines and some of the things he likes to say to you guys. What else have you found? What do you like about him and his style?
Man, like every day he comes and he's ready to work, and he's you can just tell the focus level is outstanding, and you know that only filters down to the players. So you could tell this guy's dialed in from day one. I think he was, you know, dealt a tough hand coming in and not having too much time to flip it over. So I think he's done a great job with our guys and making sure that we're all on the same page and you know, creating a little bit of a culture with what little time he's had so far. So you know, I think everyone's been happy with him and you know, we're all on board with him.
Preds forward Craig Smith is with us, and Darren Donican Chase and Craig, you look at the schedule and things really ramp up. It's compact, as you know, this time of year, but you also have some quality opponents. How much does that help you guys, knowing what you have to do night in and night out, to know that you're going to get another team's best when you go up against them?
Yeah, no, that's the tough part too, and that's kind of the name of the game in February. I mean, it's always tight, a lot of games played, and it's where teams can really make a push, because you know, you're playing every other night, which is going to be the toughest part of the season. So if you can be, you know, if you can have urgency and be as sharp as possible, then especially during that month, I think that you can really make a push and separate yourself and catch guys.
For you personally, this is something that you and I have talked about before, and just your career, it seems like goals come in bunches for you. And I can't explain that. I don't know if you can explain that, but what is it about your game that it seems like once you get going, they all come in bunches, like I said?
I mean, people always say that. I wish I had a cool answer for you. I think that it happens throughout the league. I think it happens to a lot of guys. Maybe you're in kind of a funk and you get one and you're usually going to get two or three. So I really can't explain it other than it just being what it is. If you get slumped up, this league is just like that.
You guys always say that you have to worry about what's going on, you know, with your team and one game at a time, but how much are you paying attention to the standings and to the rest of the league? I mean, there's a report Minnesota's making a coaching change this morning. How much are you paying attention to that this time of year?
Yeah, I definitely hear guys, now that we got that cool new scoreboard, we can look and see some of the other scores.
It's easy to see those scores, huh?
Yeah. So I think guys are really taking a peek and seeing, who's helping us out, kind of where we're at or who we're trying to catch. So it's, I definitely do think that guys are taking a peek and watching it. How could you not? We're so close with a few games in hand. So it's, we're just going to keep pushing. Obviously, we can only control what we can control, and we'll leave that for what it is. But coming in every day and making sure that we're taking care of ourselves is going to be main key.
Was last night your Valentine's Day present to your wife, or do you have something else up your sleeve?
Yeah, no, we celebrated two nights ago. So
okay,
yeah, I had a few other things up my sleeve.
Good job. See, yeah, you thought I was just saying
that.
Good
was
job,
smart.
All guys listening to this. Did you just hear what Craig Smith said? Thinking ahead, knowing you're going to have to practice and travel to St. Louis on Valentine's Day, and you planned ahead. Well done, sir. Well done.
Yeah, I tell you what, dinner reservations was a lot easier.
Yes, they were. Good job. By the way, good job playing the Islanders this year. You evidently liked playing your former coach, your first coach. You had 5 goals against New York in 2 games, so not bad.
I guess.
Hey, thanks for doing this. As always, good to talk to you. Go get them in St. Louis tomorrow afternoon, and we'll see you back here on Sunday against that same team.
All right, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much. I'm a big fan.
All right, that is so are we. That is Crazy Legs, Craig Smith. He had his first career hat trick last night in the 5-0 win over New York. When we come back, hey, it's a star-studded show right out of the gates. Craig Smith. Next up, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. That's next. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thank you, Austin. Last night he took up for his teammates. Got in a little bit of a scuffle with Martin. By the way, appreciate Craig Smith for kicking off the show with us. He had his first career hat trick last night in the Predators' 5-0 victory over New York. I'm not meaning to rub it into our next guest, because he probably would have liked to have been there last night in the house. Greg Sankey, SEC Commissioner. Commish, you missed a good game last night at Bridgestone Arena. Sorry.
Yeah, I got a couple updates on my phone. I also confessed to Sean Henry, I spent 11 years living in Dallas, and went with a friend of mine. I was in Dallas last Friday to a Stars game for the first time forever, so I called Sean and confessed my unfaithfulness for one night to live back the 99 Stanley Cup run in Dallas.
How did he take that?
He's a pro, he's a professional. We've been fortunate to build a strong foundation in our relationship, which helped.
Well said. Well, you are too. Did you get a chance? I feel like I would have known this, but you didn't get a chance to take in the Winter Classic, did you?
No, it was in the midst of bowl season,
yeah.
So that's one. I did check on the phone on the NBC Sports app just to see the scene, having been to any number of games in the Cotton Bowl, and literally I had season tickets when I lived in Dallas with the Stars and their great teams in the late 90s and early 2000s. So, and now with the affiliation and really friendships we have with the Predators and that Sean and I have developed, I had a special interest in that. And a great scene. I just saw actually a picture of the U.S. Air Force Academy. I think the Avalanche is hosting one of the stadium series probably this weekend based on the picture I saw. So it's just a great marketing presentation that the NFL created with those stadium series.
Saturday night, indeed. And so we're going to have a cool day here on Sunday, Hockey Day in America. Hockey is for everyone, so it's going to be a lot of fun when the Predators host the Blues, and that'll be on NBC. We haven't had a chance to talk to you, so congratulations on another national championship in football.
I walk by the trophy case every day, actually, and smile a little bit. You know, we've got that Vandy baseball trophy from Omaha last year sitting there too, which I tweeted about because college baseball begins today. So it's nice to live up to our own expectations with a win in the national championship.
Yeah, we had Tim Corbin on last week, huh? What better way to start off your season than playing Michigan? Yeah, get to see Vandy in Michigan again, right out of the gates.
I know they played in the fall too. And I know the coaching relationship, so that's a marquee matchup, and obviously I have a rooting interest for one side and one side only in that series.
No doubt about it. Let's stay right there with that theme, or right here in our backyard. Unfortunately, we've had to talk to you a lot lately about ADs and you know, bad stories or, you know, everything, the unfortunate story of David Williams, and we always appreciate your time. And now, you know, we know what happened with Malcolm Turner. He's out. Enter Candace Story Lee. We hear great things about her. The question I've got, Greg, is kind of the theme and the storyline. We haven't had a chance to have Candace in studio with us yet. We're looking forward to that here soon. But just moving forward, there is a narrative out there that, you know, Vanderbilt, the people above them, the big decision makers, the ones that need to pump the money into sports, they are in the SEC, are not really that interested in that. Whether that's true or not, that is the perception out there in this market. And we've talked a lot about them being an SEC and representing this conference. If you have any power to pick up the phone and say, hey, we need you to keep up with the times and keep up with everybody else, do you have that ability?
Well, we're always in conversation with our schools. But, you know, there's a couple realities within the question itself. One is the representation of commitment, and I think that's done in many ways, and that's clear to me at Vanderbilt University that they're committed to the success of their athletics programs. Now, the second point is transition, and when transition occurs, it obviously creates questions and instability. One of the interesting aspects of the Southeastern Conference, I'm in my fifth year as commissioner, and I have worked with more athletics directors in 5 years than Mike Slive, my predecessor, worked with in 13, which is an indication of the changing nature, changing expectations of that role, and makes it even more important to find the right person to fit. And that relates, obviously, to Candace at the present time, given her history and really a legacy that she's built on her own on that campus. And then you get into specifics around commitment. And obviously the stadium is a topic of conversation, but commitment to an athletics program, commitment to a football program goes well beyond simply people's opinion of a stadium. There's great traditional and memorial and great tradition. You know, there's a unique aspect. But, you know, that's a facility that has been certainly well-maintained, but it's different than what's been built at Auburn or at Ole Miss or the reconstructions that have occurred in Florida, Georgia, and is happening at Rupp Arena. And those are important decisions for any campus, and they're going to be made on the right timeline and for the right reasons, but that commitment goes deeper to what's happened in baseball, to the support provided to student-athletes. And I think that always has to be kept in the balance of this conversation, which I know that commitment is there broadly at Vanderbilt University.
So you hit on some of the things. There's no doubt there's a football stadium issue that hasn't been touched since the early 80s. You talked about Memorial Gym, which you're right. The atmosphere, the setup is fantastic. The history is set up. It doesn't have air conditioning. It could use, you know, it could be jazzed up. There could be some money put into that. Jordan Rogers has been on this show many times and been very critical that they're not up to speed. He goes around to all these SEC campuses, and for the student athletes, you know, they could do better in that department with their facilities and their housing and what have you. But I'm listening to you. Am I getting the right read that you obviously talk to them all the time? You are comfortable that they are all in on – you just handed them a big check, that they're all in on doing the right things and putting that into athletics?
And one of the realities, our checks and our announcement are two different dates. So those payments go out at the end of our fiscal year a few months ago, and then we have a tax filing date. But yeah, absolutely. And again, I'm going to go back to the issue of leadership transition, and that's taking place at the university. And they've done great work in identifying their new chancellor. That transition happens in the middle of this year, as I understand the timing. We're now around the third athletics director in, 13 months, and no one anticipating the loss of David so quickly, who was in many ways a guide to all that's been done over the last decade and a half. So, you know, some of that has to settle out, but you want to hire quality people. I sat by Derek at our head football coach's meeting yesterday, and just, you know, he's a leader of a program. He's had success. Last year was a tough year. But someone who's dedicated to success, I think that's the representation of commitment, is the type of people in a program. And there are obviously great leaders in place in Vanderbilt athletics.
We're talking to Commissioner Greg Sankey from the Southeastern Conference. And, Commissioner, I'd love to ask you about just your perspective on Candace Story Lee. I can go back. I was doing a season of women's basketball games. They had a great team in the mid-90s when she was playing under Coach Jim Foster. As she sort of takes the reins here, it really looks like she's going to get a chance to, you know, maybe move forward here with this job. We'll find out. But I know you've known her for a long time. What are your thoughts? Give us maybe a perspective for people that have not really gotten a chance to deal with her much.
Sure. And that's one of those questions I'm more than happy to answer, because Candace is one of what I have found to be a dwindling number of people who've been around this league longer than I. And I moved here in 2002 and quickly became acquainted with Candace much earlier in her career. She clearly, as a student athlete, was a part of a high-level, a national caliber basketball program on the women's side at Vanderbilt University and what Jim had built, and then transitioned into work in the athletic program, graduate schools, earned her doctoral degree. We honored her as a great for the conference. You know, we have legends and we have greats, and I kid her about that. And that's the kind of relationship that she knows she can call me, and I know I can call her, and we can have honest conversations because we've had those over the years. She spent time working in the compliance area, and I was a part of our team here that worked in that area. We worked through NCAA policy issues. I think Vanderbilt University's, and this is a sign of commitment, but Vanderbilt's commitment, work in innovating around summer internships for student athletes who are supported by the university through their scholarships still, that was something that required a rule change, and that was a tribute to Candace's work and David's vision. And so now young people are receiving career experience. They get to remain on campus at Vanderbilt University and continue to be engaged with their program through the summer. I think those are wins for everyone. And when we talk about commitment, I've always felt it's important to see the broad spectrum of the program, and Candace has lived that commitment both as a student athlete and as an administrator and now in her leadership role. I'm sure she and I talked last week. I'm certain that there's so much coming at her right now that we'll talk again when the time's right. And I know that because I was an internal candidate who moved into the leadership role. And you think you know. You're riding shotgun with a leader for years, and then all of a sudden you're in the seat at the end of the hall and incredibly busy. But she's prepared herself for the opportunity for the leadership role, and I'm optimistic about what she will do in creating a vision and leading forward for the university.
The last few days, I know there's been some discussion in Congress. It's going to be a long process here, I guess, to try to figure out where to go next. But as you monitor the whole situation of the decision they made in California a few months ago and athletes and the likeness and all that stuff, what are you guys doing behind the scenes to try to just be ready for whichever way this thing goes?
Well, we've been working on the issue for any number of years. It's not a secret. There have been various forms of litigation around support provided to college student athletes, the O'Bannon lawsuit and the EA Sports video game is one. There's a grant and aid related case that's under appeal right now. There was actually one in federal court in Nashville around essentially broadcast copyright law in which the NCAA prevailed. So those things were prompts of conversation. We in this conference were the first to speak publicly of advancing support for cost of attendance levels to student athletes under the federal definition. So now we're in this very public debate about what other economic opportunities should be provided to student athletes. We have a California law with a 2023 summer effective date. That certainly serves as a motivating factor. I don't view that law as a solution, by the way. I think there are inherent problems that have not been the focus of great scrutiny. We in college athletics, deservedly so, are under great scrutiny because there are high expectations because we do things that no one else does in sport. So you see the hearings this week. Obviously, there are important questions asked. There are criticisms leveled. We had our football student athletes in our office last week, and they have an interest in exploring this and talking about what does it mean if I can go sell my autograph or I can make appearances for money, and who's going to manage this for me, and how do I file my taxes? And every time we've finished a student athlete focused conversation, they say, you know what, we're interested in expanding the support provided to us. I'm not sure that they've heard the right solution yet. And they look at us for help. And I think those are three key issues for us. Okay, we can expand the support. We want to protect college athletics and the opportunities and education provided. And we need to help guide people through this process, be they our legislators, which we're doing, or our student athletes who are trying to understand what might the world look like in the future.
Greg Sankey is with us, SEC Commissioner, here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. And you have made no bones about it of how much you like our city and the different events that have come to Nashville over the last few years, the SEC tournament, the men's tournament, the women's tournament, both here and obviously the men's tournament more so the last few years. But SEC Media Day is coming next year. Why has Nashville become such a priority for the conference?
I think one of the ads I heard as I was on hold was about it was a real estate ad talking about the popularity of the city as a destination for people to move. And we've seen that popularity for the last few decades. First of all, you start with Vanderbilt being one of our member universities on Broadway, so you're there and attentive all the time. And then fast forward to the Music City Bowl, created in the 90s, and how you watch that effort expand. When you study alumni movement from our universities, we know we have a huge fan base from all 14 universities in Nashville, and you have really a cutting-edge city. And then you have leadership, and so the local leadership from the mayor's office, through the Sports Commission, through the CVB, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, the creation of a convention center, the vibrant life downtown, all of that's attractive. And then we talked hockey at the beginning of this interview. What Sean and the Predators have done, Sean Henry is team president, and the Predators have done just as an organization in the arena, hosting us, the upgrades. It is a destination. And if you go back to 2011, our presidents and chancellors, as we've moved around and been in domes a lot, said, you know, there's not a feel around our basketball tournament. There's not a buzz. And so I was tasked with thinking about where can we find a place that creates the kind of atmosphere for a basketball tournament that in the heyday of the Big East was Madison Square Garden. And you know what? Nashville was the place. And so we're going to be there really into the mid-30s potentially, with the exception of 22 with our men's tournament. Our women's tournament's there in that 2022 year. The movement of Media Days is a recognition of kind of a geographically central location. Two programs close by in Vanderbilt and in Tennessee, but a place where fans can come if they want to see and touch and feel like we've had in the Birmingham area. And the responsibility for us is to figure out what does Media Day look like going forward. And Nashville provides us some opportunities to rethink what it might look like.
Commissioner Greg Sankey with us. So you mentioned SEC Media Days coming to Nashville, and I feel like that's an event going back to Atlanta this year. It was in Birmingham. Is that something that you still want to explore moving around to different cities, or are you trying to find a home base for a few years?
When I started as commissioner in 2015, on my mind was some movement, and part of that's driven by the growth of the event itself. And really organic growth, the interest we've driven. And as we looked at opportunities, Atlanta with the College Football Hall of Fame, it being close, our championship game being played in Atlanta, the CFP National Championship game having just been played there, that was the first step of this great experiment around Media Day movement. And we did that once, then we came back to Birmingham last year. We're going back to Atlanta, so you don't want to mess too much with success. And then Nashville was the natural next step, again, being geographically located, the proximity of our universities and what we do in the city naturally. And then we'll take a step back really after this year to look at 22 to say, you know, those three cities, the priorities, do we go further west? There's some great markets that are now part of the SEC footprint. I think about Dallas and Houston. And whenever I speak of a city, articles are written, but Dallas, Houston, you know, New Orleans hosts our teams in the Sugar Bowl. We just won a national championship there. I really take an open approach as we think about the vision. That doesn't guarantee it will move. We want to make sure we're successful and continue to elevate the league's football attention in a time where there's an opportunity to do that in July. But movement is going to remain on my mind for the long term.
Greg, the final home Predators game before the SEC basketball tournament is probably one you need to come to, but it's a little bit early. You'll have to come into town early. It's against the Stars.
Yeah, I've done that a couple times, and in the early years of our work with Nashville, I had split interest. Now I'm with the Predators fully, so that's one. We also have the number one ranked team in the country in women's basketball, and that tournament's the week prior to our men, so that occupies my time.
Ah, yeah.
And, you know, we've got three or four other. I think Tennessee's still in the top 25. Had a tough game last night. Kentucky, Mississippi State, Arkansas are all in that mix. So we're looking forward to a great women's tournament in Greenville. And I'll have to watch on my phone the Stars-Predators game that week.
No doubt about it. South Carolina, they are pretty darn good. Hey, thanks for your time. As always, it's good to catch up with you, and we'll see you when you come to Nashville.
Thank you.
All right, that is Greg Sankey, SEC Commissioner, and indeed the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament here in the middle of March. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. The official weigh-ins for the IBF Super Middleweight fight between Caleb Sweethands Plant and Vincent Fegenboots, whatever you want to call him. He's from Germany. K.O. Keen. It'll be happening today at Bridgestone Arena at noon. So in about an hour, a little bit less than an hour and a half, it's open to the public. You can enter through the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, located in the main box office at 5th Avenue and Broadway. So if you want to go check out the weigh-ins today at noon, you can go do that. It's free and open. Wow. Okay, we've had an action-packed show. Greg Smith and Greg Sankey. A couple things to pass along. Bruce Boudreau out in Minnesota.
He gone.
Which is weird. They gagged.
Is that coach number 8? Are they up to 8 now?
I think they have gone 4-1-1 in their last 6. And he's out.
Yeah, I want to know what happened there.
And by the way, with, you know, 25 games to go, it's just a strange.
Very strange.
Like, why now? I mean, all this.
They have overachieved.
Yes, agreed.
In most people's eyes.
And a familiar name has taken over as the interim. Dean Evason.
Not surprising. I mean, he's been the top assistant in the last few years and obviously had connections to the former GM, Paul Fenton, because of the time they spent together with the Admirals. But now he gets his chance to be an NHL head coach, and I we'll see what they do. But it is interesting. Go 4-1-1 in their last six, and then you make a coaching change. And they're, until last night, were ahead of the Predators in the standings, now tied with the Preds at 61 points. The Preds win the tiebreaker. So I find that very interesting, as Minnesota very much in it too. So we'll see. I guess Bill Guerin has a plan.
Guess so. We'll see what they do at the deadline too. By the way, Monday will be a week out from the deadline. The Blues, they're up next for the Predators. That'll be a Saturday afternoon tilt in St. Louis, 2 o'clock start. Pre-game right here at 1 o'clock. Jay Bouwmeester underwent surgery to have an implantable cardioverter defibrillator, ICD. Obviously, I'm not in the medical field. He had that placed in his chest. So that's what the Blues have reported today.
Is that a fancy version of saying pacemaker?
That's what I was going to say. And right. We're trying to play radio doctor. Yeah. That's what I took it as. That sounds like a pacemaker. Something to regulate his heart.
Wow. And they played their first game since that incident last night. It was a crazy game.
Crazy game.
In Vegas. And Vegas ended up winning the game in overtime on a power play goal.
They had four power play goals, by the way, Vegas.
They had four. And speaking of four, Zach Sanford had four goals for the Blues.
Sure did.
What a game. And you think that...
In a losing cause.
Yeah.
Like, so how many times does four goals happen in a losing cause?
It's happened once to the Predators. Do you remember the game?
Yes, it was... Don't say it. It was... Oh my gosh! I'm Eric, the guy who played DJ in the locker room. Eric, why am I drawing blanks on him? He was in control of the music. We love talking to him. Great guy.
Had a radio show.
Had a radio show.
They called him Bobby.
Bones?
No.
No.
Eric.
Nystrom.
Yes. There you go. Oh, there you go. Bobby Nye. Bobby Nye.
Man, I would have been so mad. I can't believe I forgot Eric Nystrom. His last name.
He always kids Barry Trotz because he had four goals in Calgary in a game that they lost in a shootout. And he said, Barry, you could have put me out there in overtime. He said he had four goals. And he didn't get a shift in overtime. Yeah.
That was a
crazy
game.
That didn't make any sense, man. Like, he normally wouldn't be a guy you would put out there in overtime. I mean, he knew that. But when you got four goals, maybe you ought to consider.
What is he doing these days?
I don't know.
Is he
talked to him
in
a while.
New York?
I don't know. He married a girl from Winnipeg. So I don't know where... I don't know where they are right now. But we should catch up with them. He's a really fun...
Great guy.
Character of the game, no question.
Let's check into that. We'll skip the part. It took me a little bit longer than I should have to get his last name.
We'll have to,
I got his first name.
You
want
to edit that tape.
I knew everything about him. I was drawing blanks on his last name. He hasn't been gone that long.
But this will be the first home game that the Blues play since the incident, and you know there'll be some high emotions running through there. And, of course, it's a big weekend. The Blues... still sitting pretty. They haven't been lights out in a few weeks, but they're just steadily moving forward here. And, of course, the Avalanche have crept right up on them for the division lead, just 2 points behind with a game in hand. The Avalanche got beat last night by Washington. But Blues are good. These are two gigantic games. Nashville, if you remember the last time they played the Blues, it was around Thanksgiving time, and the Predators had gone through the real rough patch. This was right as they had lost, what, 6 out of 8, or I can't remember exactly, maybe 1-6-2. They had, if I remember correctly, they had a 9-game span where that was the record. But then they beat the Blues twice to kind of get back going in the right direction, at least for the time being. And, of course, the last time they were in St. Louis, that was the Bortuzzo hit on Victor Arvidsson. And I think you could argue that since then, Victor Arvidsson has still not found his groove. He came back off the injured list, and he scored goals in 3 straight games. But really, on a night-in and night-out basis, he has not found his groove. I thought he showed some signs of life last night. That was the best game he'd had in the last handful. He really struggled on the road trip. But if they could get him and Ryan Johansson going some, the two showed some signs of the chemistry that those two have had in the past last night. Hopefully that can lead to more. I thought even the lines, and you and Hal were talking about it last night, Darren, the lines that didn't score still look, they did the job. There was no weak line last night. They all had their chances. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of what went in. Matt Duchene hit the post. They had a couple of good looks there. Kyle Turris, I thought, looked pretty comfortable on the wing. Hal Gill backed me up on that. There was a question in the Ask Hal segment.
Yep.
On Hal's opinion on that, from the east side,
I think
it came from.
There was a guy from the east side, yep, that asked one.
That?
Hashtag Ask Hal.
And, hey, that fourth line, Yarncroke, Sissons, and Watson.
Well, they should have had a shorthanded goal.
Well, they were, one inch?
A hair.
Well, I think Turris got his stick caught on the post, right? If he'd have moved that puck 1 inch, he would have had a goal.
Mm-hmm.
But, and that was shorthanded, but 5-on-5, they were very good. Yarncroke, Sissons, and Watson.
Yeah.
So it's all a matter of whether it fits. If Turris can fit on that wing, then, man, you got four lines that look awfully good.
And here's the thing, because I'm not going to – I made this statement last night or asked this question, and I'm truly asking a question. There's no opinion behind it. But we always point to Halloween when everything fell off the rails. Now, I need to see them play like they did last night for probably 5 games in a row before I start truly feeling better about anything. But – is it fair to ask, could at some point later in the season, we point to last night as, okay, that's when everything got better. Again, they have to do it
right.
5, 6, they got to get on a streak here.
I think you are right to point out that there have probably been a few other games where you sit there and say, oh, this is the game. And,
yeah, because
it hasn't been the game. But I do think that if you go back to the Winnipeg game to start the 4-game road trip, with the exception of the first period in Vancouver.
Their last 2 games
in
Winnipeg.
Which was very... very disappointing, the first period in Vancouver. But the last 5 games, other than that first period, I think it's looking more consistent than it was before.
Back to wrap up the first hour next. Anybody see the game in Tampa last night? The Lightning, by the way, have won 36 in a row.
I didn't, but we're going to see this band coming up in a few months. Weezer.
Oh, that'll be in August. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not SunTrust Park anymore. What is it now?
Truist Park.
Truist. That's going to take some time to get used to.
Yes.
They're opening up for Green Day.
Well, I don't think they're really opening up. I think it's
okay, but they'll be will they be the first band or they'll be the second band, right?
Yeah, I would think.
Zach Cassian, he's in trouble. He's in big trouble.
He's been a bad boy.
He's been a very bad boy last night down in Tampa.
Naughty Kool-Aid.
The league needs to send him a very, very strong message that one cannot karate kick somebody in the chest with skates on.
Ooh, that's bad.
And a blade, which is what Zach Cassian did. Now, Willie, we've learned over the years how this works. We've actually talked to Elliot Freeman about this, and we will talk to him today at 12:30. He was unable to join us yesterday. He's going to join us today at 12:30. But there's a difference. If you're via the telephone or if you're in person, you already know right away if it's by phone, what the max, what the minimum, in person, you know where the starting point is. He has been asked for an in-person visit, which means...
ooh, that's not good.
He's in big trouble.
Look, for
big trouble. Now, from what I can tell...
I'd say 10
over the last couple of minutes, he's refused and just said, you know what, I'll just take my punishment over the phone.
Yeah, he's waived his right. I think when you are asked to come in there or given the chance to come in there, it means it's
serious. Explain yourself.
Yeah, it means this is big, and I think it carries a minimum of 6. I think when that is the announcement, and so it is his right to waive the opportunity. So now he's just at the mercy of the player safety department. So it's coming, and Cassian's an important player. You know, he's got 14 or 15 goals on the season. in addition to his tough guy role, which he's always had, but he was a first-round pick. I mean, he's a guy that has gone through a lot in his career, but he's a guy that has talent. But, yeah, that was an obvious punishment the second it happened.
Like, how big of a dope do you have to be to honestly with skates on? By the way.
Yeah, he should get 10 games
lucky.
At least for that.
Like, what?
He's and
they need to tell him. That's what
bad.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
What if you miss and you go get her somewhere around their neck?
Oh.
I mean, are you
no
serious?
Doubt. Yeah, that's
I
the
mean,
thing.
The league has to tell him, man, you're a knucklehead. You cannot do that.
Like, you can do a lot of damage.
Do you know what you would have? What today would have been if that would have happened for the league?
I don't even want to think about it.
I mean, good luck trying to – I mean,
yeah.
That's all anybody would be talking about, and it would be a really, really bad look. They need to send a very, very strong and stern message to Zach Cassian that you cannot do that. And you're going to sit for a while and think about it.
Yeah, I think that's why you have to, you know, drop the hammer on him. I mean, that's why I say 10 games minimum.
They lost last night. They don't have McDavid for a little while, who is superhuman, obviously, and you know, could have missed games at the beginning of the season. And I think the story is he postponed knee surgery. He probably should have gotten knee surgery, didn't. And it'd be nice to score whatever he's got, 82 points and 55 games on a knee that needs work.
Mm-hmm.
But he's injured for the moment. Now you're not going to have Cassian for a while. That's a thin team because they rely so much on McDavid and Draisaitl, and they take up such a high percentage of their salary cap. They don't have a lot of room for other guys. So they are going to have to dig down deep. That's a team that the Predators are looking to catch.
You know what I'm thankful for today? The Predators have already played Tampa twice.
Very thankful. Yeah.
Because I'm not sure they're going to lose the rest of the year. What are they, seriously, like 22-3 in their last 25?
It's even better than
something
that.
Something ridiculous?
It's even better than that. It's like 21-2-1 or something.
What?
9-0-1 in their last 10.
It goes way past that. I seriously think it's like 22 out of 24 they've won.
And it's just ridiculous how many goals they're scoring and not allowing.
Well, they look like the team of last year in the regular season.
Yeah, and John Cooper, his name, not the mayor, but John Cooper, the coach, when his name on out there of, oh, he's the next one.
Yeah.
When things were going
so poorly. On the hot seat.
He was on the quote hot seat. Now they're 1 point behind the Bruins. And it's looking once again like the Bruins, well, we'll see. We'll see if Tampa Bay ends up catching them. They're Bruins still have a chance to win that division. But can you imagine if the Bruins played the Maple Leafs again in the first round? Could happen.
We've never seen that before.
Could be the third straight year.
I'm going to guess Boston wins. Or do you say Toronto's due?
Well, they were up 3-2 last year and playing, I think, at home in game 6.
Didn't work out.
And they lost that game and then lost game 7.
Yep.
I mean, it's been a great series every time.
Well, I mean,
but the Bruins have come out on top.
If you're a neutral observer, I don't know if in Toronto they believe it is a great series because they fired
Capitals,
their coach this year.
But there was Capitals Penguins for all those years, right?
Yeah.
And you got to think, there's no way the Capitals are ever going to beat them. And then they did.
They broke through. So you're saying if Toronto breaks through, they're going to win? They're going to
get
all the way to the cup?
I don't know. I think they've got flaws. I certainly think the Bruins are better, but better team doesn't always win.
That's very true.
That's what's fun about the playoffs.
Nashville SC CEO will join us at 11:30. You just made the list at noon. Elliot Friedman at 12:30. Pick 6 at 1. Those are things on tap here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. More coming on ESPN 102.5 The Game.